number two, Bickley and Marotta Mornings on this Football Friday, live from the Octane Community Studios. If you want to read a really complete, well-thought-out, well-written piece on the Cardinals' offense as it is currently structured with Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury, I suggest you read Stephen Ruiz's piece on The Ringer. Are Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury finally hitting their stride? And Stephen Ruiz himself joins us right now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Stephen, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. We hear so much in terms of national perspective and criticism on the Cardinals, and so much of it you walk away from going, these people have never watched the Arizona Cardinals play. So I appreciate what you did. And also describing the answer on whether or not the Cardinals offense, what we saw on Sunday, is real. You use the word complicated. For our listeners who haven't read the piece yet, back that up a little bit. Why complicated?
Well, I think last year when the Cardinals offense was really rolling, it was really dependent on Kyler Murray not just making unbelievable throws, but bailing them out of situations where the play call didn't work, like scrambling out of the pocket, either, you know, running and picking up the yards himself or finding an open receiver downfield. And from the outside looking in on Sunday, when I was watching the game on the broadcast view, it kind of looked similar because he did make a bunch of wow throws, the throw to Hopkins in the back of the end zone, the throw to Kirk over his shoulder. But when you zoomed out and you watched all 22, you could see that on some of those plays, he actually had opportunities to throw it downfield, and then he bailed out of the pocket instead, and then later, and he made it harder on himself. He made more difficult throws. So I wanted to figure out, is this offense still relying on his playmaking ability, or is Cliff, has he taken another step as a play caller, and is he making things easier? And the answer is somewhere in the middle. Like, Kyler's still doing all these amazing things, but I think Kyler has also taken a step forward mentally, and that is the reason why the Cardinals' offense looked so great on Sunday, rather than Cliff's play calling improving.
Yeah, and you also coined an adjective that a lot of people love in describing Kyler Murray, and that is talismanic. And it's and that's very true. It's like the Cardinals rise when he seems to have these magical powers and sometimes struggles with the mundane. I love the nuance in this piece because of that, because we watch and we're trying to decipher, okay, is this kid ready to be able to be a quarterback, to play the position as well as do the spectacular? And you pointed out how often he kind of breaks from the script and the structure of the play. What results did you find when he does that?
Yeah, so there were 8 dropbacks where he either moved outside of the pocket or just moved around and then threw the ball. And on those plays, the Cardinals had bad efficiency. They were, I think it was minus 0.05 EPA, which is expected points added. 0 is completely average. Obviously, you want to have a positive number. On the other dropbacks, he averaged like 0.4 EPA per play, which is basically Patrick Mahomes level, even better than what Mahomes does on a down-to-down basis. So when he stayed within the structure of the offense moved the ball. When he tried to improvise, that's when they ran into trouble. The one thing is, those in-structure plays still required amazing throws. The throws I covered already, and then you have the crossing route to Kirk, where Kirk is stumbling, and Kyler puts it exactly where it needs to be. So even that isn't necessarily a promising sign for Cliff Kingsbury's play calling.
Stephen Ruiz from The Ringer, our guest here on Bickley and Marotta Mornings. In structure, out of structure, a lot of that is obviously predicated on Kyler Murray staying in the pocket. You point out in the piece that his stature makes him uncomfortable staying in the pocket. It's something that we talk about on a regular basis here. Just from your viewpoint, year three, it would seem that, you know, even though a smaller stature quarterback would feel uncomfortable, just reps and experience would make you more comfortable. If it hasn't happened by year three, do you think it'll ever happen?
Maybe not. He's not going to get any taller, but he's also been playing at this height his whole life, and Kyler Murray has been good everywhere he's been. And we've seen other quarterbacks who have the same issue, like Russell Wilson within the division. He's a shorter quarterback. He's still, I don't even know what year it is by now, but year 9, year 10, and he's still uncomfortable in the pocket when things start to close in because he is a shorter quarterback. So you look at Seattle and what they've done over the last decade, and you could see a model for this working. And after the game was interesting, Cliff Kingsbury was talking about that touchdown pass to Kirk, the one where he caught it over his shoulder like Willie Mays, and he mentioned that Kyler actually checked into that play. It was a cover zero blitz from the Titans. That means everyone's blitzing, no safety held deep. And Kyler checked into it, and he drifted back to buy himself time because the blitz was coming, and he knew if he just lofted it up to Kirk, he could do the rest. And Cliff mentioned that that was a point of emphasis for the Cardinals, beating cover zero and doing it in that manner. And he complimented Murray for doing that. And that's something we've seen Russell Wilson a lot. Like, if you look at the Colts-Seahawks game, he actually did it to Tyler Lockett when Lockett caught a very similar ball in the end zone against the Colts. So I think the Cardinals, even though they're not saying Russell Wilson's name directly, I think they're kind of looking at his tape and going, hey, Kyler, watch this. This is how you're going to succeed at this level.
Yeah, you're absolutely right when you wrote that that Murray's stature makes him uncomfortable in tight pockets. It's something that we have clearly noticed over the course of time. I'm curious if you think that is sustainable. Will there come a time when Kyler Murray is going to have to feel comfortable in a pocket to go through reads to really get to the finish line here?
Yeah, I think it's going to happen. He's going to get to a point. I don't think he's ever going to be good at it, but I think he's going to get to a point where he's good enough at it. And that's what we've seen with Russell Wilson. Like, he was just like Kyler when he first started. He would bail outside of the pocket first chance he got, but he's grown more comfortable as he's gotten more reps. And I think that's what you got to do with Kyler. You just got to give him these reps. Eventually he'll grow more comfortable. But one thing the Cardinals could do in the meantime is just give him wider pockets. I've noticed that he's willing to go through his progression to the pocket. It's just when the pocket is tight that he has issues doing that and he feels comfortable doing it. But when they run little play action fakes that kind of stretch out the defense, the defensive front, and it widens the pocket, he looks more comfortable. There were a couple instances of this on Sunday against the Titans.
Stephen Ruiz from The Ringer, our guest here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Another subject that we talked about a lot. I mean, it was hard to argue with DeAndre Hopkins and how much production he put in there week in, week out. Basically lining up on the left side. Even his week one chart against the Titans, all of his catches, I think, came when he was lined up on the left. You point out in the piece, 51 of 61 snaps, he was lined onto the left. I guess my question to you, Stephen, is why is that? When you have a receiver that dynamic, why not make it more difficult to locate him on a football field?
This is a scheme thing. The Cardinals want to go fast. They're an up-tempo team, and you see this in college. When you want to go up-tempo, you keep your receivers on the same side of the field, because if you're going hurry up, then your receivers aren't running to the other side of the field to line up. So this is an air raid tempo type thing, and that's why it happens. I think the Cardinals should sacrifice the benefits of tempo for being able to move Hopkins around, especially on third down when defenses are, you know, keying in on him. But maybe it won't be an issue now that they have Christian Kirk in the slot, with A.J. Green out wide now, and I think that brings more balance. It kind of allows the pieces to fall into place where Kirk is way more natural in the slot. And I think A.J. Green looked okay against the Titans. So maybe now they don't have to move around Hopkins as much as we wanted them to do last year, but I don't think it's a thing that's ever going to happen. I think Hopkins is going to be stationed out on the left for this season, as long as Cliff is in charge.
All right, this is smart stuff. Last question for you. I like how you noticed that there isn't a whole lot of variance to Cliff Kingsbury's offense this year so far than what we've seen in the past. There's been a criticism that he doesn't evolve during the course of a season, and defenses catch up to his stuff in the back half of seasons, a trend that goes all the way back to college with him. Do you think that might be an issue? Do you think that there needs to be some evolution to keep defenses from finding ways to clamp down on this system?
Yeah, I think there's like enough volume in the run game where he can avoid those issues, but it's the passing game where it's pretty basic for NFL standards. It's like, and that's the thing with the air raid coaches. They have small volume of plays. They just rep them a lot in practice, so the team is really good at executing them. But that works in college week to week, but in the NFL, the players are just too good, and they're going to catch up on things, and they're going to start recognizing patterns. And if they know what play you're in, and they're NFL defenders, they're going to do a good job of stopping it. So I do think he needs to add more variety to his passing game, especially in must-pass situations like third and long. And that was a problem last year. And I think one of the bigger issues isn't necessarily teams like know how to cover those plays. They just know how to pressure those plays, because Cliff is an air raid coach. He likes to have only five blockers in protection and get all five eligibles out in the route. And that's hard to do against NFL blitz packages.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think Rodney Hudson being on the team and being able to sort out the protections before the snap is going to help. I think Kyler, which is the thing I pointed out in the piece, being better against the blitz and recognizing those things before the snap is going to help as well.
Steven, great stuff. Thanks so much. Really enjoyed the piece.
Yeah,
really
great,
enjoyed
man.
The conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Steven Ruiz from The Ringer wrote that piece on the Cardinals offense. You could check it out on theringer.com. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Nissan, west of the hassle. Visit CoulterNissan.com. He's 44 years old, you say. He can't play forever, you say.
Yeah.
Well, that guy might have something different to tell you. We'll tell you what it is next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, Bickley and Murata Mornings, here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers were a winner in Week 1. We know they're the Super Bowl champs.
Mm-hmm.
We've had discussions this week, again, you know, social studies questions, asking, he's not human, what is Tom Brady? Is he a mannequin? An enchanted mannequin, I think, was one of the choices.
That
a robot, an alien.
A sentient avocado.
That's it. Yeah.
My favorite.
A wizard. That was a write-in vote.
Yeah.
He's 44 years old. He's playing at a ridiculously high level still.
Mm-hmm.
On Buccaneers.com, they have a segment that they do called Tommy and Gronky, which is just one of the worst names ever. But
I agree. That's really bad.
They're sitting around an inflatable pool inside Raymond James Stadium and answering questions from fans. And here's the audio from Tommy and Gronky.
Seems to be a really hot question lately. Can Tom Brady play till 50? Like 50 years old?
Yeah, 50.
50.
You're 44. That's 6 more years.
I don't find it so difficult. And plus, in the Florida, it's kind of a retiree state, so I feel like I can play and then just glide into retirement. I think I can. I think it's a yes.
You know, there's a little spin to that question. I think it's, will Giselle let Tom play till 50? That's the real question.
That is a way better question. And in fact, why would they not Google that? I think they should. That was, of course, no.
Maybe
that answer.
I'm so smart, I'm the Google master.
I'm just kidding.
Now.
I'm sorry, babe. I love you. You would let me. You'd let me do anything as long as I'm happy.
He's in a good situation.
Oh, you think? You think? Okay, let me just be the
going
first
out on
to
a limb.
This.
He's got a good life.
I do not need to watch Tom Brady play professional football for 30 years. I do not. Okay, I get
is
it.
Is there a bit of curiosity there?
No, not for me. Not for me. Not for me.
I mean, I kind of get that.
Go coach high school. Go join Phillip Rivers.
You're not curious what it would be like to watch the falling off the cliff, so to speak? Like we have every other aging quarterback?
Beck, I'm 50 years old. I turned 50 over the summer. The thought that somebody of the same species that I belong to could actually participate
at that age,
and
yeah.
excel at that level,
right.
You're damn right I'm curious
well,
to a degree.
I will say this. He did look just too handsome for his age and for all that stuff. He's living like this storybook life, and he knows it, and he's got all that false humility that just makes me want to throw up.
Are we sure it's false?
I don't know. Are we sure he was even drunk in that parade? Was that an act too? I'm
Ooh.
Sorry. I'm letting a lot of anger out.
Let it out, Bic.
I'm letting a lot of anger out here.
We've never seen anybody do this at that age.
I know.
And he's just blowing past it. I mean, but why the one that comes to mind is George Blanda.
Why wouldn't you? Because I'm sick of seeing him winning everything.
Okay, well, we all don't like that.
Well, that's
but
all I'm saying.
If you're Tom Brady, why would unless you get hurt? Like, I wonder if Peyton Manning would have never gotten that injury that essentially completely changed the way he played and then eventually
mm-hmm.
made him retire, how long he would have played. It's like, if you're
right.
the type of quarterback that didn't have to deal with so much wear and tear throughout your career, which Brady hasn't really done at all, he had that one season-ending injury. How long ago was that even now? 15
you're bringing
years ago?
Up something very interesting to me, because part of the reason why I thought Josh Rosen would succeed in the NFL was this idea that there have been quarterbacks, and you just named both of them, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, I think Joe Montana was in this boat as well.
Josh Rosen.
They become so smart, and they know so much about football that they almost make this position too easy.
Yeah, but... Here's another wrinkle.
And with
to all
the rules
of this.
That protect them, It just doesn't feel right to me.
But we're also just completely discounting the normal course of nature, which says when you reach a certain age, there's a physical drop off. Peyton Manning came back from the injury at an advanced age and set records in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And then, boom. He hit the wall. He couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah, he couldn't throw
the football. Drew Brees couldn't throw the football anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
What we're seeing Tom Brady do defies nature.
But he's not... Well, first of all, he doesn't base his great quarterback skills on athleticism.
No, and he never has.
He also doesn't base his great quarterback skills, at least now, on having the strongest arm in the league.
No.
So any drop-offs, those are the two probably things that would drop off most with age. And he's able to adjust. Sort of like when Greg Maddux, you know, was effective as an older pitcher because he never relied on having a 100-mile-an-hour fastball.
But still, at some point, he hit the wall or else he'd be pitching. We're seeing something we've never seen before.
Well, you're right about that. But it's not that exclusive. You're seeing elite athletes play on in their sports well past what were once established boundaries. There was once a time.
Give me more examples then, because I'm missing these.
Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal.
Now, Roger Federer
Larry
is hitting
Fitzgerald.
The wall.
Now, well, he is now, yeah.
He's hitting the wall literally a decade later than most all-time greats hit the wall.
Yeah. I mean, or more. There used to be a feeling in tennis that once you got to 30, you were washed up. I wonder how many old-timey athletes have regrets about that. I've heard John McEnroe in a broadcast go, you know what? I what was I doing, man? I look up, these guys got 20 majors each. I've got 6. I quit when I was 32 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
What was I doing?
And he hasn't quit. He still plays regular on a tour.
That's right. That's right. And so the world of professional athletes, look at Chris Paul. There's another great example. Chris Paul and LeBron James in the NBA doing what they do at their age.
LeBron might be the best example. Of Brady-esque, but he's also he's still 7 or 8 years younger.
I'm tired of watching
Brady.
Him too.
Well, I'll agree with you there.
Well, LeBron is younger in age, but not in experience. Only 1 or 2 years less experience.
Well, that's why this year to me for LeBron and the Lakers is fascinating.
Yeah, it is
because he didn't look the same after he came back from the ankle injury. We saw it up close and personal. He had, you know, bits and pieces of games where he could really impact things, but it wasn't consistent all the way through.
No.
And he claims, when I get back to 100%, look out.
Which he might never get
we'll
back.
We'll see if that happens.
He's not immune to injury anymore.
But that's the same. So that's the same thing with Brady, is that all it might take is one, not even like a season-ending injury.
One busted clavicle?
Yeah. One injury that he might have to, you know, miss a couple games and really rehab from, that he realizes that the 44-year-old, okay, I can't come back from injury as much. It's just something he hasn't had to do his whole career.
I think
one time.
Some of my anger towards Tom Brady is just stupid. I'm a sports fan and I don't like him. There's jealousy. There's envy. There's all this stuff. But it's also this idea that Kurt Warner touched upon in that tweet that Tom Brady is the poster boy for the protected quarterback. I've seen Tom Brady in football games when he's had his backside handed to him. He don't react well. Von Miller and the Broncos once beat the tar out of him in a playoff game.
The two
and
giant
Brady was
Super
about
Bowls.
To lose his mind. The two giant Super Bowls.
Well,
when forced to play real football, he's not the same guy. So that's kind of where I get sideways on this guy. Everybody celebrates how long his career is. How many hits has that guy taken?
The guy's not a football player.
He's not a football player.
I never thought I'd be the Tom Brady defender in all of this. But I am wondering, too, protected, yes, because quarterbacks are protected, but another level of protection because he is 44, because he's the GOAT. How many defenders have had shots where they could take a real shot at Tom Brady but maybe lay up a little bit?
Yeah.
You don't want to be known as the guy that ended Tom Brady's career.
Well, he was the guy for years that people like... You breathe on him, you're getting a roughing the passer call. Yeah, that's I'm sorry, I just cannot summon up any love for that story. I just can't.
I'm curious.
I've seen Tom Brady play football long enough.
Hater.
Yeah, you're right. In this situation, I am.
Text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line. It's open at 620-620 right now. 7:30 has arrived. It's time for our Rush Hour reboot on this Football Friday. Bickley and Murata mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
All right. Welcome back to Bickley and Murata mornings on this Football Friday. Getting ready for the Cardinals and the Vikings on Sunday, the Cardinals home opener. And we are asking with today's Arizona Sports Poll Question on ArizonaSports.com. How would you welcome Patrick Peterson back to Arizona if you're at the game on Sunday? Three options for you to vote on. I would cheer him on. He was a great Arizona Cardinal. No reaction, indifferent to him. Or I would boo him. That was an ugly exit.
Boo this man.
I would, if you're asking me personally, I'm not a booer, if you will.
I would be
indifferent. I would save my cheering of him for the Ring of Honor ceremony if that happens. I wouldn't engage in booing. I would just treat him like another player.
Yeah, I mean, depends on when you get to the game. I could see a lot of Cardinal fans being of this mindset. Get there early while he's warming up. Maybe give him your own personal round of applause. Hey, and once the game starts, he's the enemy. He's wearing the purple jersey. You're out. That's not a choice. So I guess I would go, you know, in game, no reaction, indifferent.
Okay.
Unless, let's say he had a pick six.
And pointed to the crowd on the way?
Yeah, well, pointed to the crowd.
Imagine,
and then,
can you imagine
and
that?
And then orchestrated the pose and the in the end zone for the picture opportunities. Then you can boo the hell out of him because he's just another guy at that point.
He would have to get an interception, though. And are we expecting this? A tackle? Anything? All right.
He had one tackle last week.
Let's vote no reaction, indifferent.
Okay.
Oh, I'm surprised. That's the leading vote getter right now. 42% of the vote. No reaction. Just let him do his thing. 35% say they would cheer him, a great Cardinal. 22% will boo him. Boo this man.
There you go. That's a perfect depiction of how mixed the reaction will be.
Yeah.
You can vote on it now. It's today's Sanderson Ford poll question on ArizonaSports.com.
Return of the Red Sea.
Oh, last day. We've been sending people all week to the home opener on Sunday. It's time for today's Return of the Red Sea winner. We're looking for Dominic Hernandez from Tolleson. Dominic, you've got 10 minutes to call 602-260-9870 to get your tickets to the Cardinals home opener, and you'll be qualified for the autographed Kyler Murray jersey. If Dominic does not call within 10 minutes, we'll open up the phone lines to someone else. If you didn't hear your name, you can still win by texting Red Sea to 620-620 and listen for your name in the 1 o'clock hour with Wolf and Luke. Once again, Dominic Hernandez, the clock starts right now, 10 minutes to give us a call, 602-260-9870 to claim your return to Red Sea tickets.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. That's American-owned and American-dreamed Brooklyn Betting.
Okay, it is indeed the Rush Hour Reboot every day at 7:30, getting you caught up on the biggest topics of the day. And we were just talking about Patrick Peterson and his return to State Farm Stadium. Let's continue that conversation, asking how he deserves to be received by the fans on Sunday. In case you missed the cut a few minutes ago, here's Patrick Peterson from yesterday saying he doesn't really know what to expect on Sunday.
I'm not expecting anything. You know, if it comes, you know, I would definitely welcome it. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is a week two game that I'm trying to prepare for and help my guys be in the best position possible to go out there and get the dub.
Okay, I know you guys are professionals. You're not going to be cheering or booing or anything.
Who said that?
The Cardinals game. But we're asking, how does Patrick Peterson, given his history with this team, deserve to be received by the fans?
I kind of like the way Vinny just laid it out there. I would say, really, it's a personal choice. It's a mixture of both. I think both are appropriate. I think there was a time when he was really a great ambassador for the team and a great player. And there was a time when there's a lot of eye-rolling and a lot of subpar performances. You brought up something recently that I think also aggravated Cardinals fans. The fact that there were times when the team might be losing by 4 touchdowns and he would go and, you know, pimp an interception and always be the ringleader getting everybody to the end zone for that picture. A lot of look at me stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That is fine as long as there's results.
At the heart of it, though, I never think I don't think Patrick Peterson ever consistently tried less than 100% to help the Cardinals win while he was here.
No.
There was a couple plays where you're like, what is he doing? But that happens to everybody, I think.
He had a real focus issue in some games.
Yeah, he did.
When his mind would drift, he could just get burned by, kind of a thing. He wasn't always 100% locked in.
Yeah.
When he was pretty darn good.
But then again, the question is asked, how does he deserve?
Yeah.
I'll steal the old movie line. Where's it from? Deserves got nothing to do with it?
The Unforgiven.
There you go.
Touche. Okay. Well, we will see on Sunday how that goes. J.J. Watt spoke with reporters yesterday assessing how the defense did in week one against Tennessee.
Well, I think overall as a defense, we played well. I think that we still have, myself included, have a lot of things that we can improve on and get better on. And that's the exciting part for me, that we can put together a performance like that and still have so much on the table and so many things that we can improve and get better at.
Okay, you heard it from J.J. Watt. He thinks there is still room for improvement on the defense. So where would you guys like to see the Cardinals defense strengthen and maybe the Cardinals team as a whole? Offense, special teams, etc.
I don't have much complaint with the week one defense.
Yeah. that sounds like player cliche talk there. That we've always got things to improve. There's not much you can improve on defensively from that performance.
Yeah. At other ends or other areas of where the Cardinals need to improve, cleaning up penalties, obviously. They had a couple of holding calls against wide receivers that can't happen to nullify big gains by Kyler Murray. That would be first and foremost for me.
Okay.
And the same applies to the Vikings. Vikings, I believe, had 12 penalties against Cincinnati.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, that's going to be a big focus for them.
And maybe
the
tight ends contributing something other than penalties would be good.
Oh.
They didn't contribute anything. That would be good.
All right, let's turn to the offense. Justin Pugh spoke yesterday as well. He called the team's set of receivers a pick-your-poison kind of group.
It's like a pick-your-poison. What do you want to do? Do you want to try to stack the box and stop one? Do you want to leave D-Hop, A.J. Green, Rondell Moore, Christian Kirk, the list goes on and on, Max Williams, leave those guys all one-on-one. It's definitely tough, and it's something that week in and week out, we have to show that we can do both.
Behind DeAndre Hopkins, which receiver are you expecting to have a bigger game on Sunday? Rondell Moore or Christian Kirk?
Or A.J. Green.
Or A.J. Green.
No, I was going to say A.J.
Yeah, which of those three, Green, who's going to have the best game?
As long as it's somebody, I'm cool, but I'll guess A.J. Green.
I'm going to guess Rondell Moore.
Okay.
I think it lines up for A.J. Green to have a big game. I'm just not convinced A.J. Green hasn't lost a couple of steps. So I'm going to vote Rondell Moore.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. And quickly, let's squeeze in college football. ASU on the road this weekend at BYU in Provo, both ranked teams. Here is Herm Edwards on this very show talking about BYU.
Now, all of a sudden, we're going to meet a team that has won a lot of games in two seasons. They have a lot of experience. They're playing in a venue that is a tough venue to win in.
What is your prediction for this weekend?
Vinny, I'm going to let you take this one since you've got bad vibes. And when you get bad vibes about ASU football, you're generally correct.
I mean, a lot of my bad vibes, it's impossible not to have something resembling bad vibes after these first two performances. The Southern Utah game was Southern Utah. You can't take much away from it.
Yeah.
Last week, it was a 4-point game in the final minute of the third quarter against a bad, bad UNLV team. Now, the defense got stronger as the game went on.
Yeah.
Offensively, I think there was a lot of fool's gold in the stats. BYU beating Utah, a physical Utah team, I don't think it bodes well. I think it's going to be a close, competitive game, but I have a feeling that BYU is going to win it.
Okay.
Yeah.
A revealing game for ASU, it sounds like.
Yeah, to me, ASU's defense was really hyped up going into the season, and they really haven't shown that yet. I think the fourth quarter last week was good.
Yeah. But, I mean, they had 140 yards plus in their first two drives, and I think they had 16 the rest of the game. So but again, they're against a challenged UNLV team. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I hope I'm wrong. I hope my bad vibes are misguided, but we will find out.
Indeed, we will.
There you go. Consider yourself rebooted.
Reboot.
There you go.
How we're going to end it every day?
Consider yourself rebooted. Reboot.
There's the latest T-shirt we can print up. Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, guys.
The Rush Hour reboot, 7:30 every day. Did we get a call from Dominic Hernandez yet, Jarrett?
Not the right Dominic Hernandez.
Another Dominic Hernandez?
Yeah. What
a bummer for that guy.
It was a bummer. He was very bummed.
Dominic Hernandez from Tolleson. You still have a little bit of time left to call to claim your tickets, the return to the Red Sea. If not, we'll open up those phone lines to somebody else. We'll talk more ASU, BYU football as sideline reporter Jordan Simone will join us straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata on this Football Friday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Yeah, the Sun Devils breaking out the black uniforms to combat a whiteout in Provo against BYU on Saturday night. And here to talk ASU football with us, former Sun Devil, now member of the Sun Devil broadcast team on radio, Jordan Simone, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Jordan, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Good morning. Good morning, people of Arizona. Happy to be on with you guys.
Always good to have you on. BYU, I think they should have lost to Arizona. I think they ran into an Arizona team that doesn't know how to make winning plays when the game is on the line. But then they bounce back and they beat Utah last week. I think ASU through two games, Jordan, quite honestly, has been kind of eh. What is your concern level about the Sun Devils' chances to win this game going in?
I'm not concerned, and I'll tell you why. I think, you know, when you look at their first two games, you know, Southern Utah and UNLV, two teams that are not good, right? You know that going into your season. You know you start your year with two cupcake teams, and so it's kind of tough, to be honest with you, to get up for teams that aren't good. It's a mental, you know, you got to say, you know, your coaches are like, hey, you know, these guys are going to be good, but you know that UNLV went 0-6 last year mm-hmm. in their own conference. Like, you know that Southern Utah is not a good football team and lost to a bad team. So it's tough to get up for those games, and as coaches it's tough, but I think you're going to see ASU play a full game, a very competitive game against a good BYU team. Now, I watched their Utah game a couple times this week, and Utah, frankly, did not play good. They didn't play good at all. They didn't look good. They had three really bad turnovers, two in their own on the own side of their 50. So I'm not taking that and going, hey, BYU is legit. They're beating Pac-12 teams. No, they beat a bad Arizona team that's really bad. And then they beat a Utah team that played really bad. And to be honest, we don't know who Utah is yet, but we don't know who ASU is either. And I think you're going to get the first real taste of that this weekend.
Jordan, Herm Edwards has spent a lot of time raving about Jaren Hall, the BYU quarterback. Do you see that dangerous of a player, or is he trying to get his defense's attention?
The dude can flat out fly. He is fast. And you know what? Everyone, you know, talks about the loss of Zach Wilson. I think you got to be pumped if you're BYU watching your quarterback, man, run all over a usually stout defense in Utah. He's got a good arm. I mean, it's not Zach Wilson, but it's a strong arm. He's got to work on his accuracy, I think, a little bit. But man, if he hits the corner and the edge, he's gone. He can straight up fly. And you know, this is a kid that's married with a kid, man. He's playing for more than most of these right. 18 to 22 year olds are. You know, he's got a family that he's trying to provide for. And so you can kind of see that when he plays. He plays very passionate. And I was impressed by his Utah game.
Jordan Simone, our guest here on Bickley and Murata Morning. Since we're talking quarterbacks, Jaden Daniels kind of makes this whole thing go. Last week he had a lot of rushing yards, and I know Herm Edwards was a little squeamish about that because he took some shots. Through two games, and I know the receiving core is still not a proven threat right now, Jordan, but how would you rate Jaden Daniels' play through two games so far?
You know what? It's not where I've wanted to see it. I'd give him a C, if I'm being honest with you guys. I think he's come out, and there's this thing that happens with guys when they get success in college football, and I know because it happened to me, it's when you stop doing the little things and you're focused on what other people are doing. You know, maybe you're a captain, you're a leader of the team, and you're worried about, you know, what the linebacker's doing. For Jaden's case, you know, he might be worried about where the running back's lined up, receivers, you know, offensive line, which way they're moving. No, just worry about yourself. Go through your reads and do what you've done to get you to this point. And so I think he's been rushing to get the ball out, and if not, he just takes off and runs. He's not going through his progressions as well as I'd like to see him. So I'm going to look for him to – he looked really comfortable in the second half of the UNLV game. He looked a lot better. And so I hope that that was the confidence booster that he needed and got back to himself and threw a couple really good passes. So, I think this is the first team of their season where you look and they go, hey, boys, we got to play, especially after they just beat Utah, you know, who's supposed to be a good team in the Pac-12 South. So I think you're going to see ASU play to their full capability this week. I think you're going to see them, you know, get after BYU on the ground and really just out athleticism them, you know, be quicker, be faster. And you know, don't try to, you know, go in there and think you're going to, you know, just outright, you know, whoop them, but, you know, get ready to play a physical battle. Cause they just beat a physical Utah team.
ASU's defense got a lot of love coming into the season, and I'm not sure that defense has shown up yet. I think near the end of last week's game, it was good. Do you expect that statement game from ASU's defense this week?
Yes, I am the absolute biggest homer when it comes to Arizona State football, and I probably said that on your guys' show already.
Yes, you have.
And so I have been on every show and said ASU's defense should be the best in the Pac-12. Sorry for the noise in the background. There is a giant semi-truck driving right by me. Perfect timing, great radio. I think, good Lord, can you give me a break, man? I'm on the radio here. Bickley Murata, 97 FM.
Tell him, man. That's a way to represent.
Bickley Murata Mornings, it's called now. Come on, Jordan.
No, look, I expect the defense to take a step forward. Like I said, it's tough to get up for teams like Southern Utah and UNLV when you know you're supposed to beat the brakes off them. The good thing is Doug Broomfield was an athletic quarterback that they played last week against UNLV, and so they're going to see a step up in Jaren Reed. But I think this is going to be their biggest test, and they got to be ready to roll.
All right, prediction before we let you go. You got a score prediction, Jordan?
112 to nothing, right, Jordan?
No, they'll score a field goal.
Usually, my first two scores were both 75 to nothing. I think this will be close in the first half, and then ASU will start to wear them out. So I'm going to say ASU 35. BYU 21.
All right.
All right. I'll take that.
Yeah. I think people would sign up for that. Jordan, you're the best, man. Thanks for joining us.
I appreciate it, guys. Quick shout out to, I'm at an event right now for the for Arizona Special Olympics. It's a really cool event at the Biltmore. And if anybody cares, you know, these kids are, you know, trying to travel around the country and do some cool things. So if you can donate, just type in Arizona Special Olympics and you can do that. So thanks, guys, for your time. I appreciate it.
Very cool. Thanks, Jordan. Jordan Simone, former Sun Devil, ASU sideline reporter for their radio broadcast. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group sports line. Coulter Nissan, west of the hassle. Two different Dominic Hernandez is called in within 10 minutes, but not the one we were looking for.
Wow.
So Dominic,
brutal.
You lost out on your chance.
Two different Dominic Hernandez is called in, and they were from the wrong city, wrong phone number, and all that stuff. Not the right guys. And a third guy called in and said, okay, my friend just texted me and said they said my name in already. I hope he's not screwing with me. I'm so excited. And I go, what's your name? And he goes, like, Phil Chambers. I'm like, oh no. Like, he was screwing with you. I'm sorry.
He's like, oh. Sorry, Phil. But hey, Phil's got an equal chance as everybody right now. So we're going to open up the phone lines. I need a caller number, Bick.
Five.
Caller five right now, 602-260-9870. You will claim the last pair of tickets we have on this show to give to the Cardinals home opener on Sunday.
Nice.
Again, caller number five, 602-260-9870. Good luck. Coming up next, it's the Bickley Blast. Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.